Does this one work? Carl, can you hear me back there? All right.
Is it okay?
Yeah. We're about ready to go.
You can if you get close to it.
Okay. All right. That's what we're doing. Committee and candidates. Committees get real close.
Bite them out.
And then you get
Well, it's another day at the Pachyderm Club, and we have some interesting perspective to present today, so enjoy your food and relax and enjoy the presentation. But I'm going to ask Joe Edwards, Republican elected state representative, and after he says the prayer and Larry says the flag salute, we're going to give Joe a big hand for taking care of business in Topeka for us. Come on, Joe.
Let us stand. Would you pray with me? Father, we thank you for being a big God. We thank you, Lord, for all the things that you do for us on a daily basis. Your benefits are renewed every day. I pray, God, that you will bless our nation. Father, Lord, just reach down and touch our president. Let him know that you are there with him. Guide him, direct him. Put your thoughts into his thoughts. Father, I pray, God, that you will touch our servicemen that are in harm's way today. I pray that you will minister to them in a very special way. Father, Lord, touch all of our state governments. Let them know what is right for the people. Father, Lord, as we learn today in this Pachyderm Club, guide us and direct us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Please raise the American flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
There's no comment.
You're fine.
Thank you, Joe and Larry. In fact, let's just give Joe a big hand for being here today. Former Senator Chris Steiniger is here. Where are you, Chris? Oh, there he is. Let's give him a hand for being here. Carl Koster's here. Give him a hand. Former sheriff, but always sheriff to me, Bob Henshaw. Let's give him a hand. Tim Whitman, where's Tim? Right over there. I see you, Tim, with Wichita Independent Business Association. Carlos Mines, former mayor of Wichita. Let's give him a hand for being here. Carl Peter John, current county commissioner. Richard Ranza, Richard's hiding in the back. All right. Shirley, you said you wanted to say something about the whatever. So you say it, and I'll.
Okay, whatever. No, I want to talk a little bit about membership. Can you hear me back there? Okay. We have a number of guests here today. If you're not a Pachyderm member and you came to hear Plato today as a visitor, would you raise your hand? Good. That's wonderful. We're so glad to have you here. And if you decide to join, well, before I get into that, up here on the table is a sign-in that you can get emails about future programs. And we do not sell the list or give it away or anything like that. So you're safe in signing up. And then you'll get a bulletin each time about what the program is. And then if you decide to join, it's $50 a year for an individual or $75 for a couple. And this is a good time. This is January, so if you join, it's good for the full year of 2013. And we'd love to have you as a member. If you don't have a badge yet like this, these are $10 and well worth it because they go on with a magnet and they're easy to put on. And we keep them up here for you week to week. So we're glad you're here today and hope you see fit to join us. Thank you.
He's here.
Well, next week we're going to have a meet and greet for them. It will include candidates from City Council District 3, James Clendenin, Clanton Cohen, and Mary Dean. And City Council District 4, Josh Blake, Jeff Blueball, Craig Gable, and David Glover. The following week, February the 8th, we'll have another meet and greet for them, and it will include the school board candidates. So watch your email for the list, or look on the website. I also have a few of these that I printed. It's a kind of a track to run on program for the Republican program that's going on in Hutchinson tonight and tomorrow. Sam Brownback's going to speak tonight, and it's Pat Roberts, I believe, tomorrow at lunch. If you care to have a copy of this, it's up here on the table. Otherwise, I think you can just find it on the internet. Well, we have had a special dispensation of technology, and John Todd has worked another miracle, bringing in a person from, what is it? It's 400 BC. My goodness. Just think of that, 429 B.C. And I'm going to have John come in and just tell you about this very special gift. What do we need?
Well, we're still having to talk to
him. Oh, you can't hear
it? No. I don't. Can you hear back there now? Okay. You're going to have to bite the mic. But he's going to have a robot.
He's going to have a robot.
He's going to have a robot.
That's right. John, come on, tell us about our very special guest.
Thank you, John. It is my pleasure to introduce Plato, classical Greek philosopher, mathematician, student of Socrates, writer of philosophical dialogues, and founder of the Academy in Athens, the first institution of higher learning in the Western world. Along with his mentor Socrates and his student Aristotle, Plato helped lay the foundation of Western philosophical philosophy and science. Plato was born 424 BC and left this world the first time. First time. 348 BC. Plato is appearing today with us today through the miracle of modern technological drama. He will be beginning the topic, the masses or masses, the case against democracy. Plato, I must say, for a man of 2,437 years of age, you don't look like you're day over 80. Please join me in giving our special classical guest, Plato, a warm Hackerman Play welcome.
Thank you, John. I would
say that's the finest introduction I've ever had. Except one time the introducer didn't show up and I didn't do introduce myself. I want to compliment you, all you people here, who evidently have it better than your government, because I think looking around, I suspect you probably see some weaknesses in not only the president's administration, but the administration. And so let me tell you a little bit more about myself first. As you can see, the purple indicates that I was born into royalty. The assumption was that I would go into public service. My family had done a very good job of making money in the Fez, and I myself, as a young man under the tutelage of Socrates, figured there was something more significant to do than making money. One thing appalled me very much, that after my Athens lost to Sparta, things were just helter-skelter. And I also sort of peered back into history for what I could find. And I noticed that consistently, government after government was just riven.
Corruption, incompetence, and during my frequent trips up into the present time, I noticed that the same thing prevails. So what I'm here to do is to suggest that there is a better way, not a perfect way. And so what I've done is one of my books, the best known, The Republic, created a utopia. In my native Greek, it means nowhere. I don't expect it will ever be established, although I did have hopes of making a good start for it, because it was a brilliant young ruler by the name of Dionysus, and I thought that I could educate him and make him have the ability to have the combination of both the proper kind of education and the genetic background that went with it. Unfortunately, Dionysus didn't take too kindly to this. He had a preference for wine and women, and so then go by the wayside. But as was mentioned, I had the benefit of being under the greatest teacher of all time, Socrates. And the thing that really appalled me was that the so-called democracy of the time, by a popular vote, because this man was a truth seeker and did not believe in going along with myths, he was tried. And by a vote of the people, he was condemned to death. And I figured that any society would do that to a brilliant person who was a trailblazer in terms of thinking. That showed me one thing. Democracy is based upon incompetence. And in truth, we must come to the conclusion that the masses of asses and really incompetent to rule. And so I thought of a different kind of system, and it would be based on justice. Now, I'm sure you legal minds in here have a different concept of justice, but to me, justice means everybody gets his due. It is based on the idea that the equality that you bandy around in your history books, that people are equal, is nonsense. How many people here, may I see, have ever played this round ball game called basketball? Anybody here think that he or she was equal to Michael Jordan in this time?
No.
What? Another thing too, if you have a serious illness and you need a diagnosis, you go out and take a vote of the people? No. You want somebody who has competence. If there is a breach to be built, a vote of the people? No. You want a very competent civil engineer so that the bridges can cave in. So how do you achieve this justice, this ultimate type of government that is far superior to what you have today? In my utopia, I don't claim that will ever exist here on Earth. But what I do is I set goals that we can strive for, that we can do a lot better than what we've done in the past or in the present. And so my system is very much based upon the idea of acquiring knowledge,
Socrates, I learned, virtue is knowledge. And how do you achieve this knowledge? You do it through an educational system. You rely on both genetics as well as the proper type of environment. As one recent scholar has written quite accurately, heredity deals the cards, environment plays them. And so I make note of that in terms of having a very rigorous educational system. Now, in the first phase, children between the ages of 5 and 20 are exposed to the what we would call the humanities, as well as what I call gymnasium. In humanity, you learn an appreciation of the finer things of life. You learn important qualities, such as courage, truthfulness. One of your presidents, evidently, Bill Clinton, did not learn that aspect of character. You take people and you give them the best in terms of education and challenges, and also follow the premise that most people believe in opinion instead of knowledge. And the idea is to create more knowledge. And so with the combination of an appreciation of the humanities, enjoying the finer things in life intellectually, rather than acquiring bad habits by listening to poets like Homer and all, which pick up the wrong qualities, you have a situation whereby you mold the young people in proper thinking. And during this educational system, very rigorous, very demanding, at the age of 20 years old, you provide a rigorous test. Those who do not pass the test, with their heads held high, go out into the real world. And they are members of the bronze class. I believe there were three classes of people analogous to three precious metals. And they will become farmers, raising food, laborers. They will assist in the everyday tasks that have to be done. Some will become artisans and create fine things in life. At the age of 20, those few tasks will go on for a period of 10 years of rigorous mathematics, theoretical mathematics, and then learn the practical applications of mathematics. And at the end of that time, they will take a very demanding test. And a few will pass. The ones who don't will become auxiliaries. It's very important to have warriors, for example, and people who are able to successfully carry out defense measures. Or if you need to see some territory sometimes occur, that will take place. So this mathematical regime is very, very difficult, far beyond the calculus and trigonometry that is offered today. At the end of that 10-year period, there will be 5 years devoted to what I call dialectic. Dialectic is a combination of logic and philosophy. It will be very rigorous and demanding, and you will really stretch your minds in that process. And at the end of that period, another difficult test is given. And those of you who pass are going to be eligible to have a chance of further development to become believers, what I call the philosopher rulers. But that isn't enough. One of your contemporaries, George Wallace, used to talk about the fact that there are pointy-headed college professors who can't even talk their mouth straight. We don't want these kinds of people as rulers. We want them to put themselves in the real world, the people who are able to have an apprenticeship that is very rigorous and demanding. If there's a war going on at the time, then you go forth and you assist the generals and you are evaluated on how you perform. Or if there's an important sewage system to be constructed, and I'm very proud of the fact
that I led the way for constructing the sewage system that was very successful when the Romans came hundreds of years later. They still found it intact. And I was able to evaluate those who could, you know, apply their theoretical knowledge to practicality. So that, in essence, is the basis of my educational system. It is based upon knowledge. It is based upon helping to acquire virtue. It is based upon developing principles of courage. It is based upon rigorous mathematical challenges. It is based on dialectic, the marriage of logic and philosophy. Well, who becomes these philosopher rulers? One thing that I'm very proud of, and it hasn't been carried out on a large scale, or at best, a very minimal scale, is my rulers provided for both men and, most important, women. In your own time, you've seen examples of women who were superior leaders. Margaret Thatcher, for example, who was a mentor to our own Ronald Reagan, that you people look up to. And so these philosophers are going to be people who are not only bright, very bright, extremely bright, but also highly competent. Now, as an incentive to make sure you have people who are really conscientious about what they do, they are going to live in poverty. Now, if you're a person who has a great deal of ability and you would rather make money, you are free to do so. But for those who are willing to create a system that can become enduring, if they do it very effectively, that challenge is there. And we have people who have to live in poverty who cannot feather their own nest. In addition to that, they have to live a healthy, basic lifestyle. They will sleep on plain wooden slats. They will eat plain food, which would actually be healthier for them. In addition to that, there will not be any private marriages, no petty jealousies or anything, no families to work with. You have a president by the name of Jimmy Carter, who had a brother who was an embarrassment, taking a $2 million loan from Libya, which he never paid back, would sit on the front of his front porch and drink bottles of his Billy beer and throw them out, and it's an absolute embarrassment to his brother. None of that kind of a system. Now, why should people want to live this kind of a life, aside from the idea of making a place for themselves in history? There's another good reason. Unlike traditional marriages, there are going to be husbands and wives in common. Now, as a builder of utopia, I often leave out specifics, but people will get to enjoy each other's company, you know, every 3 or 4 days, you know, variety of slices, things of that nature. And just think, both before and after kissing, for example, you can have very intellectual discussions. So that would appeal to people. And, you know, not just stuck with one thing, so to speak. We will do everything we can to encourage the offspring being produced from these couples who are quite brilliant. Because they will have, for the most part, except for what you now know as recessive genes, they will have basic head starts in terms of becoming future generations of leaders. And anyway, at birth, so that the parents aren't aware of who their children are, they will be taken away. The fact is that most of your world leaders have shown that they are very lousy parents. Imagine Winston Churchill, for example, having a daughter who would often pass out drunk on the streets of London. Or young Jimmy Roosevelt telling about when he was 15 years old and had a very urgent teenage problem. And because the secretary liked him, the best he could do was to get him in after only a 2-day wait. This is no point in waiting to raise children. So we're going to have people who raise these children from the time of birth until they're 5 to get them ready to enter the training to become possible philosopher kings or philosopher queens. We'll just call them rulers to begin with. So this is the situation that we have. People
basically relying upon rigorous challenges, both physically and mentally, people developing qualities of leadership, people who have the kind of background and training. Can you imagine a country that might decide for President of the United States to have a person who is known for skipping votes in a state legislature, being a community organizer, and then being pressed for the presidency? I understand that happens sometimes. Or to be fair, there might be a straight Democrat or two here. Can you imagine a man who failed as an oil wildcatter, had a serious drinking problem, in contrast to his successor, who had a serious marijuana problem, a young man? Or we want people who have character. We want people who have ability. We want people who are able to have the personal types of qualities that won't interfere with them being very effective leaders. And that, unfortunately, is what you have under your so-called democracy. So, in essence, this is the situation that I lay out. Now, I think we can summarize it by talking about a model that we use. First of all, I hold to what I call the theory of forms, that there are no perfect things here on the planet Earth. What happens here is you live in a shadow world. You imitate. You live with a lack of reality. And so what happens here is that, well, I'll give you an example. All of us have an abstract idea of what a straight line is, but research after research has determined there is no such thing as a perfect straight line. It's just impossible. If you put a ruler under a microscope, you will see gags in it. And for that reason, it's very important to have a model of striving for perfection. It is found in the heavens with the gods. We are not sufficient as you people are at the time. We have a number of gods. Most of you have one god, or three at most. And so, in that way, there are differences here. So let me sort of bring this together in terms of the allegory of the cave. What I do is point out that we are very similar here on Earth to prisoners who are chained to the walls. And behind them are fires. And the heat is so searing, they cannot turn around and look at the fires. All they can do is look at the walls ahead of them. And they see shadows of animals running by, or other people who might be in back with them. But they do not see reality. And so the job of the philosopher ruler is to use the superior knowledge to come as close to reality as possible, and for that reason, to be able to come back into the cave of those of you who live in this ignorant world here, based upon myth, superstition, belief, and gently taking these people by the hand, expose them in various degrees to the sunlight, to get away from the shadows, and help them develop a better developed sense of what reality really is. And so that is the challenge that I leave with you today, to look for the kind of people who can come closer to having the highest intelligence, the best kind of training, and most important, the type of education that teaches character, that you can rely upon, that will show good sense. For example, they don't use their office to spend much more money than they actually have. I understand this happens on both of your major parties today. So, what I advocate, in summary, is a world in which nobody is forced to become a philosopher ruler. By the way, how many people here would like to have the challenge, assuming you have the high intelligence and the proper background, to be able to have the power to set these rules? Any volunteers? One? Two? Three? Four? Five? Okay. So most of you you want. And not all of you who want to will necessarily do so. Can you imagine a world leader appearing before a collection of nations at the United Nations and taking off his shoe and pounding it on the podium? I'm just going to say, well, the United States remains enough to invite me today, but just around the world, it's very universal. We have bloodthirsty leaders and all. But we want people who are willing to live in poverty, do not have private families, do not be able to collect jewelry, to do the job of making laws for the rest of the people and shooting for a place in history, knowing that they've done a good job so that humanity itself might benefit. So this is the goal that I strive for. Will I ever achieve perfection? No, even in the shadow world. But we can do much better in terms of reducing the shadows and becoming closer to reality. And so what I do is I invite you all to expect more from your leaders, to demand more from your leaders, and to hold them truly accountable instead of being taken in by slogans where candidates are sold like, you know, bottles of shampoo and things of that nature. So this is the challenge I leave to each of you. You can do much better than you've been doing, and so I suggest that you do that. I hope you will do that. I enjoyed being with you today, and I do hope that some of you might take the blinders off and think in terms of making your government much better than it is. Thank you. Anybody have any questions?
I have a question.
Sure.
From your time to our time, has there been any advance in mankind other than the ability, other than technological advances, to kill more people?
Yes, I think there has been an ability in terms of being able to create more food for people to eat. There's still many distribution problems in it. There's great medical advances, one ruler I can think of along the way came close to my principles was Frederick the Great, who was a person, from what I read, of superior intellect, who would often dress up in peasant clothes and go out among the people so that he could have a sense of reality, and he would not get too far ahead of the people. But he used wisdom, it was very important in his rule. So I would say there have been advances. There have also been advances in the ways of killing people, of being able to inflict great harm, of taking this precious earth that you have been given and spoiling it in many ways, exposing it to certain dangers to it. So it goes both ways. But what I'm asking for is that we do more of the advancement and less of the other. Good question. Yes?
You have to know the history of Apollos. Did he have any training or benefit that was beneficial from, that was taken from your school?
I'm too old to recall that. Yes.
What is your opinion of the American Revolution?
Well, I'm mixed on it. I don't think it was as bad as the colonists claimed. I don't think that the British also were treating him very fairly. I would say for the time, your Benjamin Franklin, who I think would be a potential philosopher king, made every effort he could to get the British to be less heavy-handed, to provide more representation. And I really think that the colonists made an honest attempt. Not all of them, some were quite hot-headed. But there were the efforts made, and so I would say it was necessary at the time. But I would rather have a world where revolutions are not necessary. Yes?
How are you doing? I guess you propose a republic versus a democracy, is that right?
That is right.
Okay. I have some Democrat friends who acknowledge that, you know, rather than what the media feeds us all the time, they acknowledge we have a democracy, I mean, a republic. But they insist they would rather have a democracy. Now, what I tell them is that under a democracy, you have no inalienable rights. Do you agree or disagree?
Yes, you might say it would be nice for people to have inalienable rights, but in practice that doesn't happen. One thing I want to add is a democracy, if it has any chance of working, has to be confined to a smaller area and a smaller population. The important thing is to be able to have face-to-face relationships with one another. When we become anonymous, as we are, one of your scholars, David Reisman, wrote a book in the 50s called The Lonely Crowd, how a lot of people come in contact with each other, but they really don't know one another. On the other hand, you take Mennonite and Amish communities, where if there's an emergency, they all pitch in, they know each other. Or conversely, I remember one of the professors at WSU talking about when he was in high school on a debate team, and came from a strict family, and they traveled from Florida to Atlanta to a debate tournament. And these boys who at home behaved themselves went hog wild, and one of them became so tanked up that the next morning he could barely mumble in his debate. So I think that one of the difficulties that makes it impossible to have a real democracy in a large mass of 300-something million people like you have, just would be very difficult. I can't imagine 325 people getting out in the midst of a wheat field somewhere in Kansas and conducting business in an orderly way. On the other hand, you have town meetings in New England, where a small group of people get together at the beginning and they interact with one another. They decide, you know, do we need to repair any bridges, any roads that were washed away? What should our budget be? I think you can come closer to a democracy, so provided a small group of people. Carl?
Plato, if my memory is correct, you're an Athenian, but the system you described sounded much more like the type of system they had in Sparta. Could you clarify kind of your geographical predilection there?
Right. I say environment is going to have an impact, but it isn't everything. And as a superior person, having the benefit of the great teacher Socrates, and a student Aristotle, who is brighter than any of us that I'm aware of, you learn to not be locked in to any kind of a system. So what I believe in doing is taking the best of everything.
Are you an Athenian?
Well, I was an Athenian. Yes. Still am, for that matter. I'm buried in Athens.
What do you think of the Cancer Dam so-called assault weapon?
Well, it's hard to say because we didn't have them in my time. We had other weapons. So I'll take a pass on that one. As I understand, I turned on this boob tube that you have in your country, and I saw this fellow Joe Biden sort of running away from it. On the other hand, what Senator Feinstein of California wants it. In terms of my ability to do any analysis, and you know, I was more of a thinker than I was a politician. I never did become a real political leader. I don't think that it's going to go anywhere. John? Oh, you're one of those lawyers. Oh, playing on your society. I don't spell it out, but I would assume that the group would be what your Supreme Court justices did to Bill Douglas. They just sort of shut it in and made it uncomfortable for him, so he finally gave up the illusion that he was still a member of the Supreme Court.
Are you ready?
Yes.
All right, well, let's say this,
I I'm much more inclined toward that than I am a democracy based upon the ignorance of the masses. So, but you want to have an oligarchy that has enough sense not to go so far in abusing people if they want to be bought. So I would be much more toward an oligarchy based upon wisdom and based upon character. Very often we're lacking character in terms of the people who have all types of power. So that's what I'm trying to instill during the first 15 years. I never got into the specifics, but I would assume that the philosophers themselves would have a pretty good idea, and they might even modify after a while. We are not rigid people. We're capable of using our minds. But the benefit we're going to have that you people don't have, you congratulate yourselves on having a couple of token women in the Congress of the United States, we would have equal numbers of women. In fact, Professor Sebastian back there tells me that in his classes, he finds the average IQ between men and women is roughly about the same. It's just that the men have a higher predominance of those who are very, very brilliant, and also a higher predominance of those who are very stupid. Those women are much more stable. But you handicap yourselves greatly by leading women out of the mix. I'm not talking about some sort of a organization that, you know, demands all kinds of things and puts on all kinds of displays or makes a mistake of having a legitimate cry for pay equality, equal pay for equal work, and instead throws something like abortion into the mix, loses Orthodox and Jewish women, affirmed Catholics, fundamental Protestants, they just automatically diminish their rights by showing stupidity in that regard. But I think intelligent women should be there. We suffer a great loss when they're not.
Yeah. Isn't it the case that the best thing for democracy really is sort of the negatives that we stop it? It's kind of like rights. The most important rights are negative rights.
Yeah, protection against your government. Yeah.
Thou shalt not prevent free expression. Positive ones can get very problematic and dangerous.
Yes. But a lot of times your rulers take advantage of the negatives in terms of putting down those who disagree. That's why I envision a group. I didn't mention a specific number. I imagine it would be somewhere between a dozen and 20. You get too large, it's more difficult, reaching consensus and so forth, and having enough sense to know just how far they can go.
Yes, Clay, back in your days in the military, how many women did you have in combat arms?
I didn't count them. No, it's one of the many things I can't remember. There are certain advantages to nearing 5,000 years old. Yeah. So, get a question from everybody. Or take a few from anybody. Anyone else? Okay. Mel, who the hell is he? Aristotle, who believed in the empirical approach. You have to look at the evidence, not use selected instances. There are rich people, though, who do want to further their nets. For example, there is some oil company where I don't notice the people there being satisfied with being rich and less likely to seek political power by using their riches to help create a system for that. I don't remember the name. I don't know, start with a K or something like that. And other questions?
Just because rights can be violated, does that necessarily imply that they didn't exist?
I think they exist when they're accepted by the body politic. I don't believe in this thing called natural rights that by your nature you have them. I think that's a myth. My basic purpose is people are not equal. You can see that in the distribution of talents, abilities, physical skills, or whatever you might have.
But you need forms.
In forms? It depends on the nature of the form, not a wild of
forms. Forms.
Yes.
Logos.
What?
Logos.
Yes.
So if we have a logos, would that be, if the logos is a
No, I believe that it should come from a combination of what people desire and what will work and what will be accepted. I don't think it's automatic.
Yes.
So how did you critique three people, Diogenes, Ayn Rand, and Milton Friedman?
I would evaluate them very highly because they challenged the status quo. They made people think. There are not necessarily a lot of eternal truths that are everlasting as such. And I think it belongs to the outer form of what works and what doesn't work. And so I think workability is very important. And I think all three of the people you mentioned have made contributions, have also, to their credit, had people who violently disagree with them. And so it is good when you get people thinking. So I would give them a very high rating in regard. Yes?
In your time, you've seen quite a few bloated empires fall. Would you say that we in America are a bloated empire? And if so, how far away are we from falling?
Well, I'm not good at predicting the future, but I would say you are bloated in many ways. You're overextended. You had a president who was very well praised for his inaugural speech, where he used phrases like, in defense of democracy, you would go anywhere, any place, any time. And I think it's led to a lot of thousands of needless deaths, of expenditures of great sums of money. And so I would say you've got some serious problems in your nation that you have to cure. Whether it's going to lead to a fall or not, I don't know. Compared to the rest of the world, you're not as bad off as most nation states are. But I just cannot predict the future until I've been there.
Yes. Let's say you have tyranny in place of in its place in injustice. It's open-minded.
So I would be against tyranny unless it's, if you want to use the term, a tyranny of brilliant ideas that take note of what will work. I believe in general that rulers should engage in a consensus building after much debate. Realize that a lot relies upon how well they do, but I'm just afraid there are too many examples of tyrants of taking advantage of people, restricting their freedoms.
And along the front of the United States and other countries, it seems like some work better, have some sort of check and balance when the leader or one part of the governing body oversteps its bounds. and your utopian beliefs, where's the check and balance?
Well, here's where Aristotle and I had a big disagreement in terms of the check and balance. He believed in having a structure that was somewhat akin to what your nation has now. But I believe the check and balance would be within the philosophers themselves, having the superior minds throwing forth different ideas, battling it out between themselves, rather than any one person dominating. And the check and balance system can work out in terms of minimizing the opportunities for tyranny, but it also makes it very difficult to make progress when progress is needed. Now, how do you define progress? That's in the eye of the beholder. But I don't have much of faith in any of the systems extant in the world today. But again, student Aristotle, who was brighter than I was, would support your position.
You have aged very well over the years. The question I ask, though, is you're pretty funny. Do you have three or ultimate leaders or whatever? Do you have senior services or support for the seniors?
What do you mean by financial, economic support?
Correct.
No. I'm very conservative when it comes to the idea of not having a welfare system like you have here. I do believe, however, that anybody who contributes to society ought to receive the basic minimum necessary for a little more than just a bare subsistence existence. So I think those who contribute ought to be able to be taken care of by themselves. I believe in the idea that you save for the future, and you don't rely upon the government, which takes a lot of money out of the system just in terms of administration. I understand that you have universities, for example, that are over-administered when the main job is to teach and develop knowledge and so forth, and these bonded administrators get very high salaries. I get my information President Sabasi over here. And he has tenure, he has nothing to worry about. And he's an example of a person who deserves tenure. You just can't fire him for having an unpopular idea. And that's a good part of tenure. There's a negative downside of tenure too, whereby public school teachers often get it after 3 years or so, and you're stuck with them, and administrators don't want to go through the hassle there. So I believe that people ought to make it on their own, but they ought to have the opportunity. And so I think there is a value place for those people in the bronze class who do contribute. What?
What about Thomas Jefferson?
I think he's an example of a very brilliant person who lacked real character. In terms of, he set up a university he was very proud of. He loaded it with professors who thought like he did. He didn't like the realism of the philosopher Hume, and so he had a book by a man named Baxter who rewrote it as it should have been written in Jefferson's estimation. He was very much against the alien and sedition laws because of infringing on freedom. Yet when he became president, he let it be known that he wanted certain Federalist editors thrown into prison. He didn't like the decisions that his cousin John Marshall was making that didn't agree with his, and he tried to get him impeached and removed from office. And for a person who talked a good game about racial equality and so forth, he still lived off the backs of the slaves. He didn't release his slaves like George Washington did. He also was a man who liked to live high, the finest imported wines and all. And when he died, he was in debt. So I much favor a man like Alexander Hamilton.
can you weigh in on your opinion on de Tocqueville's Democracy in America?
Yes. I believe it's perhaps the best book written in analyzing America. He believed in elitism. He thought that democracy went too much toward mediocrity and was very concerned about that. He also believed in the idea of associations, of people getting together in groups. In fact, this has been picked up by James Madison when he talked about the danger of factions, and he wanted to have different groups that would try to balance each other in order to prevent tyranny. I would regard de Tocqueville as the finest of American thinkers. In fact, I know a good professor at Wichita State who always has his students read de Tocqueville. In fact, the great architect, Frank Lloyd Wright, came to an undergraduate institution that one of the professors attended. And at the very beginning, he asked for a show of hands of all of those who had read de Tocqueville. And a few hands went up, and he spent the next 10 minutes belaboring the audience for their ignorance. You call this a university? So I believe that de Tocqueville is a very important figure in fully analyzing the importance of having a lack of democracy, of having of the standards set by the bright and the best.
Okay.
Sure. What? This is Scott. Well, I think the problem with democracy comes in is where very often you don't get the people who are fit for office. I mean, your last two presidents went wild in terms of spending money that wasn't there. You had a president before that who had basically good intellectual genes, and he spent the last 2 years of his presidency, instead of leading, of defending himself against being removed or going to prison, lack of character, and yet he was elected 2 times. It's sort of ironic. You have a president like young George Bush, elected twice. His father, who was a very brilliant person, who took responsibility, was only elected once, rejected the second time. I would say that is the danger of the democracy, why I don't believe in it. You have to have the right person in the right job. No more so than the community organizer.
Plato, let's give Plato a big hand. Our good friend, Professor Mel Kahn, do you have an opinion about him?
Oh, I think he means well, but he's not in my league.
Our friend, Professor Mel Kahn, let's give him a big hand. Well, I want to thank all of you for coming today. This was a lot of fun, and we'll get back to some real serious next week and vet some candidates for city council. So, see y'all back next week.
Much like him as a huge. He's staying healthy and so on.
Yes, he is.
Great. Glad to hear you. Relax. Time off.
Hi, how are you, Carol? I'm glad you're on the show.
It's real first. I may have. I'm going to How are you, Bob?
Jennifer, I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
To